I'm David Martin Davies, and coming up on The Source, 1 in 3 San Antonians have pre-diabetes, and about 1 in 6 already have full-blown type 2 diabetes, which foreshadows cardiovascular, kidney, and vision complications and early death without sustained treatment. Type 2 diabetes is a defining public health challenge in San Antonio. Now, a leading San Antonio physician is drawing attention to an early method of identifying people at risk for developing pre-diabetes years before the full-blown diabetes disease is diagnosed. Pre-diabetes can signal to people who are on a path towards diabetes to adopt lifestyle changes and healthy eating habits before it's too late. This is a community conversation. We want to hear from you. Call in at 833-877-8255. That's what's coming up on The Source. But first, this news.
Support for The Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at uthealthsa.org.
Are you ready to amplify your impact through workplace giving? Many employers match donations, doubling or even tripling your support for TPR's local and global programming. Some employers even match gifts from retirees and spouses, so your contribution can go even further. Check if your company participates today by visiting tpr.org/workplacegiving.
Live from the John L. Santico Studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Type 2 diabetes in San Antonio is a major serious public health problem. About 1 in 6 in San Antonio has full-blown type 2 diabetes, which foreshadows cardiovascular, kidney, and vision complications, early death without sustained treatment. And about 1 in 3 in San Antonio has pre-diabetes. But now we're able to talk about the condition that signals someone is on the road to pre-diabetes. We're calling this pre-diabetes. A new study from the University of Texas at San Antonio Health Science Center indicates that changes in the body will lead to type 2 diabetes. They occur long before the current diagnosis threshold for pre-diabetes is met. So we're going to be talking about the first of its kind study being talked about around the world, it's being published on July in the Journal of Clinical and Applied Research and Education, Diabetes Care. It challenges conventional thinking about the onset of type 2 diabetes. And we're going to be speaking in just a few minutes with the author of that study, Dr. Ralph DeFranzo. He's a professor of medicine and the chief of the diabetes division at the University of Texas at San Antonio Health Science Center, and he is the deputy director of University Health Texas Diabetes Institute. And so, you know, we've got to recognize that type 2 diabetes is one of San Antonio's most urgent public health challenges. It's driven by longstanding inequities, food environments that promote ultra-processed diets. There are barriers to preventive care, with recent estimates suggest that over 15% of Bexar County's adults are living with diagnosed diabetes. And so many have diabetes and pre-diabetes, and they don't even know it. And now we're joined by Dr. Ralph DeFranzo. And Dr. Franzo, thanks for coming in.
Yeah, it's my pleasure to be here. I have to say, you already gave a great summary. You don't need me anymore.
No, we need you because, well, first of all, I just want to meet you because you're an incredible researcher, and this information is incredibly important for our audience and our community. So I do want to let our listeners know they can call in with their questions and comments and their stories about diabetes, how it's impacted them and their family, how they have coped with the, when they have been told you have pre-diabetes or you have diabetes, or how have you managed that and helped someone in your family manage that? Because we know that this is, when one person in a family gets diabetes, the whole family gets diabetes. We got to think about it in that way. And you can call in with your story. It's 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. So, Dr. DeFranzo, so what exactly is pre-diabetes, and how is it clinically defined compared to pre-diabetes and type 2 diabetes?
So let's start with type 2 diabetes. So as you said, it's a big problem here in San Antonio. It's very common in the Hispanic population because the genes that predispose to diabetes are enriched in the Hispanic population, and that 15% of the population, I think, is really an underestimate. And if you look at people over the age of 40, probably it's closer to 25% or 30% of people here in the San Antonio area have type 2 diabetes. Type 2 diabetes, very easy to diagnose. You can just walk in, for instance, to the Texas Diabetes Institute, where I live down on Zarzamora Street. We can do a finger stick, and we can measure what's called the hemoglobin A1C. You don't have to be fasting. And that hemoglobin A1C value, if it's above 6.5%, is the cut point for making the diagnosis of diabetes. And then, of course, before you develop diabetes, we have another word that's called prediabetes. That diagnosis is made by, again, same finger stick, hemoglobin A1C, between 5.7 and 6.4. So very easy to diagnose. And for people who are concerned that they may have prediabetes, you can go online and just dial American Diabetes Association test for diabetes. There's a series of questions. You just answer them and you'll get a score. And if the score is above a certain number, it says you're at risk for having diabetes. Basically, you may have prediabetes. And then
by asking like your family history, what are your habits and things like that?
Yeah, it asks for your age. It asks for your height and your weight. It will calculate the body mass index. It asks you for a family history of diabetes. Very, very simple things that most people will know. And then it gives you a risk score. And then based on that risk score, it says you're at risk for diabetes. And if you want to follow up on this, you can just visit us at the Texas Diabetes Institute. You don't need an appointment. We take walk-ins. But if you want to call and let us know you're coming, the number is 210-358-7200. Or you can just call my office over at the Health Science Center, 210-567-6691. Now, I don't like the word prediabetes, because if you have prediabetes, you basically have all of the problems that overtly diabetics have. They're just not as severe enough to push you into that diabetes category.
You know, I have been saying that for decades.
Well, we in agreement. Can you convince the American Diabetes Association? That's a problem. Yeah. So I agree with you completely that prediabetes really is diabetes. If you wait long enough, we know that the great majority of these people with prediabetes over the next 5 to 10 years will develop diabetes. And also, people who have prediabetes are at high risk for having heart attacks and strokes. And the people don't even know that their blood vessels are being, the large blood vessels are being affected.
It's because of the inflammation.
Because of the inflammation. And people with prediabetes oftentimes have high blood pressure. They oftentimes have abnormal lipid levels, which predispose to cardiovascular events. So in my opinion, we need to start treating earlier. Particularly in high-risk people. So, for instance, you live here in San Antonio, and you have pre-diabetes, and your mom has diabetes or your father has diabetes. You're at incredibly high risk. And let's say both your mom and dad have diabetes, or a mom and you have a brother, you have about a 70 to 80% risk of developing diabetes over the next 5 years. So why not get started on treatment earlier? So there is no drug that's approved by the Food and Drug Administration for the treatment of prediabetes, but we have very good studies saying that if we treat you at the prediabetic state, we can prevent you from going on to develop diabetes. So even though there are no drugs approved for prediabetes, we have drugs approved for diabetes, and we use the same drugs to treat people with prediabetes, and these drugs are extremely effective in preventing the progression to overt diabetes.
Right. So we're going to talk about, I want to ask you about metformin on that when we come back from the break. Should metformin be sold over the counter? I wonder about that. I'll ask you about that when we come back. And our phone lines are open, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be back in a minute.
Support for this podcast of The Source comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company. They are committed to helping policyholders build strong and thriving businesses through their exceptional service. More at texasmutual.com/texansdeliver. Texas Mutual. Texans get it.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about diabetes in San Antonio. We have a serious chronic public health crisis with type 2 diabetes in San Antonio. It is reaching younger and younger people with every generation. It is causing a shortage of lifespan. And during that lifespan, there's all sorts of pain and trouble and amputations, complications, kidney problems, cardiovascular problems, vision problems. This is something that San Antonio needs. We need to be talking about this every single day to communicate that this has to be taken seriously. And with us to do that today, we're joined by Dr. Ralph DeFronzo, professor of medicine and the chief of the diabetes division at the University of Texas at San Antonio Health Science Center, deputy director of the University Health of Texas Diabetes. So we were going to break, I want to talk to you about metformin, because you're saying, well, they don't have medication prescribed for people with pre-diabetes. Maybe, why don't they prescribe metformin? And you're responsible for bringing metformin to the United States.
Yeah.
Tell me that story.
1995, metformin is available in many places in the world. And I work with a company in France called Liefer Pharmaceuticals. There was another drug in this class that metformin's in that had some side effects. Metformin really has basically no side effects, some mild GI side effects. So there was a reluctance by the Food and Drug Administration to approve metformin. But working through Liefer Pharmaceutical and also companies here in the United States, I literally single-handedly directed all of the studies to get metformin approved, and it was the lead article in the New England Journal of Medicine, the top clinical trials journal in the United States. So we got metformin approved in 1995, and at that time, all we had was insulin and sulfonylureas. So this was revolutionary, and metformin is a very good drug. It actually has been shown to decrease the progression of people with prediabetes to diabetes by about 40%. Which is very good. But we actually have drugs that are even better than metformin. So we have another drug, and I did all of the studies with pioglitazone. It's called the ActNow study. It decreased the conversion of prediabetes to diabetes by 72%. And I've also been involved with the newer drugs, the GLP-1 receptor agonist, semaglutide, Ozempic, and then tirzepatide, Mounjaro. And these drugs, although they're expensive, they decrease the conversion rate of prediabetes to diabetes by 85 to 90%. And I think many, many people listening in have seen Oprah on TV as she went from being this big and smaller and smaller and smaller in front of our eyes. And the drug that she was taking was Mounjaro. Again, all of these drugs are very, very effective for preventing prediabetes from going to diabetes. They're also very effective in preventing heart attacks and strokes, which our diabetic patients are at risk for. But as I said, in the prediabetic state, these drugs are not approved. So we talked about, should metformin be sold over the counter?
Yeah, let me explain why I think that, because, you know, I go to my doctor and he says, oh, your sugars are fine. You know, you're not at risk of it, but I'm still kind of concerned, and I do want to control my sugars. And he says, well, he doesn't want to prescribe me anything. And I think metformin, as I read about it, I know it doesn't have side effects. I don't see it as a a drug that is like is going to whack me out like some of the other medication is. And I said, well, I'd like to have it. He says, well, I'm not going to write it. I won't write you a script for it. I would like to have it. So, you know, why couldn't we have it over the counter?
Yeah, I would say the most important reason is not because the drug's not safe. About 20% of people may get mild GI side effects.
That's gastrointestinal.
Yeah, diarrhea, mild, some mild nausea. But other than that, the drug, in my opinion, is safe. More importantly, you shouldn't buy it over the counter without having talked to your doctor, because people with diabetes have more than sugar problems. They have blood pressure problems. They have lipid problems. They have high cholesterol. They have high triglycerides. So it's important to have a really good, complete checkup. And many people, we find about 20% of people who present in this pre-diabetic state already have significant atherosclerotic cardiovascular disease. So it's very important that you see your doctor. And then your doctor's going to have to make a decision as to whether or not you should be placed on one of these drugs. So the American Diabetes Association does say if you're at high risk in the pre-diabetic state, then they do recommend you consider being placed on metformin. High risk means your hemoglobin A1C is in the range of 6 to 6.4, means that you have a family history of diabetes. It means that maybe you have a family history of cardiovascular disease, maybe a woman who had a history of gestational diabetes, meaning diabetes during pregnancy, and then after delivery of the baby, the quote, the diabetes goes away. These individuals are at very high risk for developing diabetes. So my opinion is that particularly the people who are at high risk should be on some treatment for their pre-diabetic state. Now, what should be the treatment? Could it be metformin? It's a good drug. Should it be pioglitazone? It's a good drug. Should be a low-dose combination of metformin, pioglitazone, which I like. If you're overweight, okay, even better if you can afford Mounjaro or Ozempic. These are great drugs because they're good for your obesity, and they're also good for preventing prediabetes from going to diabetes. So there are lots of things that need to be evaluated, and that's why I don't think we should have metformin available over the counter, because I think there needs to be a more global evaluation to look at all of these potential problems, because you may need to be placed on a statin for your high cholesterol. You may need to be placed on blood pressure medication. I need to do an electrocardiogram to make sure there's no evidence of heart disease. So there are a lot of other things that need to be evaluated in the pre-diabetic state before I decide whether you should be treated and what type of medication I should put you on.
Well, let's talk about lifestyle changes, diet changes, carbohydrates, a lot of sugar. Always, you know, there's basically we're surrounded by temptations, you know. So isn't that should be the first, thing we reach for is stay away from the Twinkies?
Yeah. So, of course, lifestyle modification is always going to be first-line therapy. And that's another reason why you need to see the doctor. And the doctor needs to hook you up. For instance, we have nurse educators. We have dietitians. We actually have two therapists in an exercise gym. So we are very big on lifestyle. But you need to recognize that almost all of the studies have shown that on a long-term basis, people don't stay with the lifestyle change. If you do, the big trial carried out in the United States says while you're in the trial, you can decrease the conversion rate of pre-diabetes to diabetes by 50 to 60%. The problem is once the people went out of the trial, they go back to their old ways, and then what we see is that a lot of these people go on to develop overt diabetes. So in my opinion, the majority of these people are going to need, in addition to lifestyle, particularly if they're at high risk, they're going to need some kind of pharmacologic therapy to prevent the progression of prediabetes to diabetes.
Well, I mean, just our diet, you know, switching from the simple carbohydrates that we have to more complex carbohydrates and even fewer of them. A lot of people talk about going into a high ketogenic style of eating, even a carnivore way of eating. And then also combining that with having measuring your sugars, getting one of those glucometers or constant glucose monitors, and being able to see when do my sugars spike and how do I adjust my lifestyle accordingly.
Yeah, so these are all very good points. I'll make a few comments about diet. To me, the most important thing about diet is maintain your body weight, lean. Okay, the most devastating thing that can happen to a pre-diabetic is gain weight, because if you are a diabetic, you are very resistant to the insulin that your body is making. And if you gain weight, that makes you more insulin resistant. And that puts a big stress on your pancreas to secrete more and more insulin, and eventually your pancreas wears out. So if I could do one thing, it would be to get people to lose weight. Most important thing you can do. Then there are other important things, as you point out. We don't want diabetics taking in simple sugars because that's going to jack your glucose up very high. We don't want people taking in a lot of, saturated fat, high cholesterol foods. So diet is going to be a very important part of the treatment. But the simple fact is we know from over 200 studies that have been published in the literature that on a long-term basis, only about 10 to 15% of people start and maintain the diet after 3 to 4 years. So yes, diet's important, but in many people, we need to go beyond diet, and that means some kind of medication to help the people.
Well, I like to not go to medication, try to do everything you can to avoid that. So I've heard a lot of talk about using intermittent fasting. Go 12 hours, you know, if you don't eat when you're asleep, at least I don't. And so if you go to bed, stop eating early and don't start eating until later, 10 to 11 o'clock in the afternoon, then, you have a good 15 hours of you haven't eaten anything. And that gives your pancreas time to rest, and it gives your time for your body's blood sugars to level out, isn't it?
Yeah. A lot of misconceptions about this intermittent fasting, okay? There's nothing magical about this, okay? The only reason why intermittent fasting works is you take in fewer calories during the day. There is no reason above and beyond that. So, of course, if you skip a meal, you're going to maintain your body weight. No. So other than the fact that you take in fewer calories,
not about the blood sugar spiking throughout the day and keeping your sugars up high throughout the day?
No, that's a major misconception. And the ketogenic diet, we actually have done a big study on this. The ketogenic diet works for only one reason. You take in fewer calories. So if you go on to the ketogenic diet, the ketones shut off your appetite. So people placed on the ketogenic diet, lose weight. And we actually did a big study where we took people and we put them on the ketogenic diet, but we force-fed them so that they didn't lose weight. And there's no benefit to the ketogenic diet whatsoever if there's no weight loss. So there are a lot of these things that you hear a lot about, but there's nothing magic to them. If you take in fewer calories, you lose weight. That's the best thing you can do. That's what the ketogenic diet does. That's what intermittent fasting does. What do we know about the long-term safety of the ketogenic diet? Almost nothing, quite frankly. And I can tell you that people don't stay on this diet for a long period of time because it's not an easy diet to take in. So we actually have little information about what happens after a year when you're on the ketogenic diet.
And we're worried about cholesterol and heart disease and hardening of the arteries and all these things.
Yes, that's why you need to see your doctor. He needs to take an electrocardiogram. He needs to examine to see if your pulses and your legs are decreased. And so there are clues to tell us that you may be at risk for, say, a heart attack or a stroke. I need to listen to the arteries, the carotid arteries, to see if there's a whisper, what we call a bruit. So there, as I said, about 20% of people in the pre-diabetic state, when they come, we find out they already have advanced cardiovascular disease. So, we talked about, should we have metformin over the counter? It's quite safe drug, but And I don't have a problem with that. My big concern is I need to evaluate all of these other things. So let's say I prevent you from having diabetes, but you have a heart attack. Well, that's not so good. So there are ways I can evaluate. Are you at risk for having a cardiovascular event? Should be on one of the statin drugs? Is your blood pressure elevated? All these things need to be evaluated and taken care of.
All right, we're going to take a break here. We'll go back to the pre-diabetes. When we come back from the break, we'll also get Bob on the air. And if you want to call in, you've got a question or comment, you want to talk about how your family has been dealing with diabetes, how have you addressed if you were given a pre-diabetes diagnosis? Were you able to manage that? Give us a call, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK, pre-diabetes. So what is it? And is this a indicator that we should be taking seriously so that we can get a handle on full-blown type 2 diabetes in our community? This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Stay with us. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. With us in the studio, Dr. Ralph DeFronzo, Professor of Medicine and Chief of the Diabetes Division at the University of Texas at San Antonio Health Science Center. He has a recently published study talking about pre-diabetes. It's an early indicator that someone is on the path to becoming a full-blown diabetic and trying to signal that they need to go on medication, change their lifestyle, and get a hold of this, because diabetes is not a game. It's serious and it's unforgiving. We've seen that here in San Antonio. So what can we do about that? How do we process this information? Give us a call, 833-877-8255. Let's go to Bob on the phones. And Bob, you're on the air.
Hi. I was the diabetic coordinator for diabetic retinopathy for eye disease and diabetics, and we were doing screenings down in South Texas, 21 counties. HEB provided a bus. They funded a bus that the Lions Club ran, and they would go to these 21 counties and park the bus for 2 or 3 days and do screenings. We would check them for eye disease. If they had a problem, we'd refer them to a local or we send them up here to San Antonio. My concern was the concept there. When you talk to people in South Texas, a lot of them have a feeling that they don't want to go to the hospital. They say, you really have severe disease, you should go see somebody. I'm not going. Why are you not going? Because my mother died there. She had diabetes. If you go to the hospital, you're going to die. And so many of them felt that way. You know, of the thousands and thousands that we see, we found many that felt that way. And so I was just concerned about how I changed that attitude. You know, If you have any suggestions or anything.
Well, Bob, thank you for calling in on that. So this surrender idea, but we're going to get it. We're all going to die anyway. You know, why don't we?
Yeah. So this is a major misconception. First, let me just say that we work closely with the Lions people, and they've done a fantastic job, and they're particularly interested in retinopathy, and they support a lot of the work that we do, and I give a lot of talks for them. So thank you very much for all the help that you give us. But another one of the reasons I told you why we need to see the people who have prediabetes is that all of the people need to have a screening eye test. And we can pick up evidence of diabetic changes in the eye. And then if we can get you on treatment even earlier, we can prevent the eye disease from progressing. But the key point here is that we want to get you early. And if we see you early in the pre-diabetic state or very early at the time you're diagnosed as diabetes, and we get you on the appropriate treatment, we can prevent all of these complications. That means you won't end up on dialysis. You won't end up with diabetic retinopathy in blind. You're not going to end up with an ulcer on your foot and have an amputation. So yes, it's very important that people understand that the reason why their mom or dad got into trouble and ended up on dialysis or had a heart attack is because they didn't come to the doctor and they didn't get the screening. And because of that, they didn't get the appropriate treatment. So you are right. We do have to educate people to understand. Don't be afraid. If you come early and we make the diagnosis of prediabetes or diabetes and we get you treated, we can prevent these devastating complications.
In children, you can look at the back of their neck and you can see like black lines on nigricans.
Acanthosis nigricans.
Okay, yeah. And so in Texas public schools, there's supposed to be screening for that. We're the only state that requires that screening to happen. And then there's really nothing, you require follow-up, but that's just, you know, that's where the ball gets dropped. But we have a problem of childhood type 2 diabetes, and it is an exploding problem. If you have a child under the age of 10 who gets diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, I mean, they will not live till 40.
So at the Texas Diabetes Institute, we actually now have more children with type 2 diabetes than with type 1 diabetes. And you are absolutely correct. It's an exploding problem, particularly here in San Antonio and the Hispanic population, where the genes that predispose to diabetes are very common. And almost all of these children are markedly overweight. And they're very difficult to treat. And what you said is absolutely correct. At very early ages, in their 20s and 30s, unbelievably now, these people are developing eye problems. They're developing kidney problems. They even have heart attacks in their 20s and 30s because they're starting at such an early age. But again, as I said, important to make the diagnosis you have diabetes and get yourself treated, because a lot of these complications can be prevented.
Let's go to Joan on the phones. And Joan, you're on the air. And Joan, you there?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Yes, I am. Thank you. Yes, listen, I'm very happy to hear what your guest is talking about. I think it's very important. However, I totally understand why you do not want to endorse over-the-counter metformin, why you want people to go to their doctor to get diagnosed. But the reality is, especially in San Antonio, there are a lot of people at high risk of diabetes who don't go to the doctor, can't go to the doctor for whatever reason.
No insurance.
Yes. Or maybe, you know, time, can't get off work. Who knows? So instead of throwing them to the wolves, how about work with like CVS, Walgreens, whatever, to do the A1C test, to maybe do blood pressure, maybe you can do a few other things, whatever they're able to do. They are able to do more and more and more, maybe cholesterol, whatever. And then they can communicate. Perhaps there's a doctor who will see them without insurance, without any money. I don't know how this works. Mm-hmm. But then they could perhaps be guided to take metformin, to do what they can, rather than throwing them to the wolves.
All right, Joan, thank you for the question.
Yeah, let me say, we're not throwing them to the wolves. And I can tell you at the Texas Diabetes Institute, we see 10,000 unduplicated diabetic patients every year. And the great majority of the people actually are under the sort of poverty level. And if you have no insurance, we take care of everybody. We're part of the university hospital system. And so we don't let a single patient go untreated because of cost. Not only that, when we set up the Texas Diabetes Institute back in 2000 or so, we have a special medicine program, 340B, that I worked hard to get. And so all of the medications are at an extremely low cost. And if you have our CareLink insurance, you in fact can get all of these medications. Above and beyond that, we talked about the fact that I actually brought metformin to the United States. The SGLT2 inhibitor class of drugs I invented but didn't patent because I wanted to get the information out for people. That drug now has been shown to be very effective in treating your diabetes, preventing heart attack and kidney disease. All of the early work with the newer drugs, the GLP-1 receptor agonist, I did all of the mechanism of action. We have clinical research studies that are going on. In fact, if people are interested in any of these clinical research studies, Mounjaro, which is the drug that Oprah took to make her shrink down, that drug is $1,000 a month. We have a big study that's going on. If you are interested in participating in the clinical research study, you get the drug, you get complete all of the medications that go with this, and basically it's free. And this is a long-term study. It's a five-year study. So you, if you were interested, you would get the best drug in the world, in my opinion, for treating people with type 2 diabetes, if you have overt diabetes, basically with no cost at all. And as I said, you can walk into the Texas Diabetes Institute and just say, I would like to have a hemoglobin A1C and get screened. There's absolutely no cost for that. So we're not throwing people under the bus. We are part of the university health system, and I think we do a fantastic job at helping people. Now, if CVS or HEB wants to set up screening programs as well, I think that also would be fantastic. And a lot of CVS and Walgreens, they actually do have programs where they will screen you for diabetes. So this is an opportunity. They do check your blood pressure as well. But again, you need to remember that a diabetic patient has many problems beyond glucose that needs to be taken care of. Let me just give you the number at the Texas Diabetes Institute again, 210-358-7200. Or you can call my office, 210-567-6691. We're not letting any patients go untreated. We are definitely not throwing them to the wolves. University Health System is here to take care of people who cannot afford treatment, and I think we do a very good job at that.
Now, I've been to the facility on Zarzamora Street.
Yep, exactly.
And it was a tuberculosis facility?
A long time ago, but it's that facility was all kind of torn down and then now rebuilt. This, in my opinion, is the number one center for type 2 diabetes in the United States, maybe in the world. We have people, I've had people from Jordan, from Kuwait, from Brazil. Everybody comes here to see how we did it. And we have, in my opinion, the most sophisticated program, very comprehensive diabetes education. We have a lifestyle program. We have an exercise program with gym and physical therapist. We have 7 full-time endocrinologists. We have many primary care docs that work collectively to really treat diabetics. And as I said, if you are part of our system, you can get the medications basically at no cost if you cannot afford for them.
We haven't even talked about how much type 2 diabetes is impacting our local economy, taking people out of the workforce. It is just something that if we could just figure out a way to get it off our backs, that would be great. And early detection is the path forward. So we're going to continue talking about pre-diabetes. our phone lines are doing pretty good right now. I'll get Laurie on the phone next, but I got other people too. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Stay with us. And we're back with The Source on Texas Public Radio, David Martin Davies, and we're talking about pre-diabetes, and diabetes is a big deal in San Antonio. We got to figure out a way to crack that nut. We're with us with Dr. Ralph DeFronzo, and he is the guy to be talking about this, and he had a recent article published talking about pre-diabetes. Before I get to the next caller, I'm going to ask you, so are there physical markers that I can just point to and say, this person has pre-diabetes, or should we just all assume that we're all pre-diabetic? I don't know.
Yeah, there are no, I would say, physical markers. Maybe acanthosis nigricans, because that's a marker in children.
The thing on the back.
Yes, the black patches on the back. So what we did is we know who's at risk for diabetes. You have a family history of diabetes, family history of stroke, you have gestational diabetes. And so we took these high-risk people and we did an oral glucose tolerance test. Now, in the old days, before we had the hemoglobin A1C, this is the way we made the diagnosis of diabetes. We gave you a sugar solution to drink, And then 2 hours later, we measure your glucose. And then based on what the glucose is 2 hours later, we can say you have diabetes. If it's greater than 200, that's the American Diabetes Association number. If you're between 100 and 200, we say you have prediabetes. It's called impaired glucose tolerance. But in doing these studies in these high-risk population, we also discovered that a one-hour glucose during the oral glucose tolerance test greater than 155, you are in a, quote, pre-diabetic state. So this is actually a brand-new finding. We actually discovered this in 2007, 2008, and now it's been confirmed by many, many people, and there was a big international conference as to whether we should change the screening criteria for diabetes and require an OGTT with a measurement of the glucose at 1 hour. And what we showed is that these people who have pre-diabetes, they already are very resistant to insulin. They
That's the problem right there. Yes. That's the thing.
Yes. So they're resistant to insulin, and their beta cells are already starting to fail. But you can't determine this unless you do the oral glucose tolerance test. But if you do it and you measure how much insulin is made, how much glucose is made, I can determine whether you're resistant to insulin, and I can determine whether your beta cells, which are secreting the insulin, are not working appropriately. And, you know, this is a continuous disease. When are you really pre-diabetic? You're pre-diabetic when your parents conceived you, and they gave you a set of genes that are going to predispose you to diabetes. And then what happens is that literally from one day of life, if you've got these genes that predispose to diabetes, you can't get rid of them, okay? And that's why lifestyle is very important early on. But you need to follow the people up because eventually they're going to be, quote, pre-diabetic. Beta cells are not working, right? They're insulin resistant. And then they become a little more pre-diabetic. They go from the pre-diabetic stage to the pre-diabetic stage. Now they're really in trouble because, in my opinion, they're sort of pretty close to diabetes, but they haven't reached that magic A1C number. And then you go to diabetes. So this is a
continuum. And so when you get to diabetes, that's when you see the actual physical harm being done?
You can actually see it in the pre-diabetic stage. So in this pre-diabetes study, what we showed that if you using a ultrasound, you can bounce sound waves off of the carotid artery, which is the major artery that goes to your brain, and you can already see the plaque formation. So we know that this disease starts even before the pre-diabetic stage in terms of atherosclerosis. The two big problems in diabetics are they don't make enough insulin and they're resistant to insulin. We can see these defects in the pre-diabetic state. So this disease is a continuum. And that means even though we don't have an official drug approved by the FDA to treat, I think eventually we'll have a change. Will it be next year? Will it be in 5 years? Eventually, we are going to start to treat at an earlier stage.
Well, we hear from Secretary of Health Bobby Kennedy Jr. He talks about diabetes being a big problem. You know, I've got issues with some of the things that he says that they're absolutely nuts. But he seems to be thinking a lot about diabetes as a problem. Do you think that he will be able to, you know, make some changes on that?
Well, that would be very nice because diabetes is a huge healthcare problem. It's for each individual patient, it's a huge problem. Each patient knows they have issues to deal with. For the healthcare system, if they just look at the expense of treating diabetics, it's enormous. And if now someone has a heart attack or they develop heart failure, if they go blind, if they develop kidney failure, that's an enormous expense, $70,000 a year for dialysis. Yeah, we can prevent this. I mean, if you just think of it economically.
But is he on the right side of this?
I hope he's on the right side of it.
Okay, all right, let's go to a caller. Sorry. Laurie, thanks for hanging on, but you're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I am one of those people that have familial diabetes. Both of my grandmothers died in their 70s of heart attacks. Both of my parents had heart attacks. They did not die from it because they got surgery. And so my doctor knows all about this. I'm a person that has exercised all my life. However, I have high cholesterol, high blood pressure, and I was pre-diabetic for for many years. And so I finally got to be a point away from being diabetic. And my doctor still could not prescribe me Mounjaro. So my husband and I decided it with, you know, which she prescribed it. But the first year I paid $12,000. The second year I've probably paid half of that, because now Mounjaro, you're able to get it through, I don't know if it's Lilly, but you can get it for half the cost, but you have to give your own injection. So anyway, I spent, you know, $18,000 to lose 55 pounds, and my life has changed. And I still exercise every day, but my blood work is perfect. My whole beef is, why could this not be available to pre-diabetic people? Because, I mean, I'm healthy now. And instead of letting people get to the point of being so sick that, you know, and have to pay for this medication out of pocket, it has to change.
Wow. Lori, thank you for that great call. Appreciate it.
That is indeed a great call. And the problem she deals with is the problem that a lot of people out there in the community deal with. So these newer drugs are fantastic, but as she pointed out, they're about $1,000 a month. So they are very, very expensive. So if you have overt diabetes and you have the appropriate insurance, which many people don't have, you can get the drugs. If you're overweight, you don't have to be diabetic, but if you're overweight and have had a cardiovascular problem, you're at risk for cardiovascular events, then the drug is approved for treating overweight people.
Well, how overweight? I mean, I could be a pound overweight?
Or... Oh, no. It means that you're in the obesity category, you know, BMI greater than 30. You know, people always ask me, how do you decide whether you're overweight? I tell them, get up in the morning, look in the mirror. You pretty much can tell whether you're overweight.
I have one of those magic mirrors that tells me I look great. Let's go to Val really quickly. Val, we're short on time, but I want to get you on the air. Go ahead.
Yes. My A1, I'm a former RN, and my A1C has been varying between 5.7, 5.9, and 6.1 on a fairly regular basis for quite a while. Years ago, I participated in a study at the Bartok, and they gave me acarbose, which I understood blocked the absorption of carbohydrates in the gut. And I asked my doctor to give it to me, and she wouldn't. And, of course, she hasn't even mentioned metformin. And I'm just wondering what can be done.
All right, thank you for the call, Val.
Yeah, thank you. Acarbose is really not prescribed very much by physicians in the U.S. It does block carbohydrate, absorption. It has, I would say, moderate efficacy. It actually, there are trials in people with prediabetes, and it is effective, but it has a lot of GI side effects, and it's not easily tolerable. I would say the good thing is that your A1C is stable at about, you know, around 6 on mean. So your doctor probably feels that as long as it stays at 6, you're okay. And I would say, maybe your doctor's right, maybe he's not right. But if your blood pressure is okay and your cholesterol and your lipids are okay and that you don't have any evidence of cardiovascular disease, it would not be unreasonable just to watch as long as you stay at 6. But if it started to go up above 6, then I think something would need to be done. So, there needs to be a complete evaluation cardiovascular-wise, lipid-wise, blood pressure-wise, before your doctor probably feels comfortable prescribing a medication for you who clearly has a pre-diabetic state.
If I go to my doctor and I tell him, hey, I think I'm pre-diabetic, he's probably going to look at me kind of weird. So this is still very new, right?
Absolutely very, very new. But if you come and we do the glucose tolerance test and we determine that you're, quote, pre-diabetic, what that means is that I need to sit down with you and I need to discuss with you that you're at risk for developing diabetes and also cardiovascular disease. So I need to educate you about the appropriate diet, maintaining your weight, being careful about foods that are high in cholesterol, checking your blood pressure, so that if we start at an early stage and I can educate you about the potential risks, if you don't do these things, maybe I can stop you from going from the pre-diabetic state even to the pre-diabetic state.
Right, and we're not stuttering. This is really, it's pre-diabetes. Dr. Ralph DeFronzo, professor of medicine and chief of the diabetes division at the University of Texas at San Antonio Health Science Center and deputy director of University Health's Texas Diabetes Institute. Thank you so much for coming in today. It was fun talking to you.
My pleasure, and I hope that this benefited everybody here in San Antonio. We'd love to see you at the Texas Diabetes Institute. 210-358-7200. We have many studies where you can get these medications free.
All right, that's it. Thanks for coming in. Bye-bye.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies. Tim Gutierrez is the show's producer. Additional production support from Steve Short, Ruben Garcia, Yvette Benavides, and Dan Katz, Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.